Hi there, Daniel Browning with you for Into the Music. Music features and documentaries here on RN. Thanks for your company. For many whose introduction to reggae was via Bob Marley, it might come as something of a surprise to learn that the main way reggae reached its core Jamaican audience was not by radio or TV or even live concerts, but by mobile discos, otherwise known as sound systems. A unique Jamaican innovation, these discos on steroids pumped out hugely amplified music for working-class Jamaicans before the island had even developed its globe-conquering music forms like ska, rocksteady and, of course, reggae. Jamaican migrants to the UK from 1948 onwards brought with them their hunger for music, for new words and fashion from the Caribbean. A local sound system scene sprung up in the 1950s to cater for the growing African-Caribbean community. The South London suburb of Brixton was a vital hub for the development of these new sounds. Producer and reggae nut Brent Clough was first drawn to Brixton in the early 80s in a period of great civil unrest. More than 30 years later, Brent returned to record local musicians and residents and to hear old and new tales of social music in Brixton. This is Brixton Ballads, Sound Stories.
Brixton hot! Look how you big and fat!
This is a Victoria Line train to Brixton.
It's party time in Brixton.
You know, you don't really get that much trouble down here anymore.
I've only ever stayed in Brixton for a few months in total. But it's a more vivid and meaningful place to me than anywhere outside of Australasia. Maybe it's because I turned up at a crucial moment in Brixton's history, just months after the April 1981 riots, the events known locally as the Uprising. The riots put Brixton on the global map, gave the area a reputation as a community resistant to Margaret Thatcher's mean and unpleasant England.
Unemployment!
While there are plenty of romantic tales of Brixton as a rebel stronghold, I recall it as a place of cultural distinction, the sort of suburb where a migrant from the leftover bits of empire might, for the first time, feel the potential of a new post-colonial metropolis. In fact, for me, it's all about this. This sound is at the heart of my memories of Brixton, a rough cassette recording of the great reggae sound system Sekoxen in session in the mid-1980s, with a man like Just Screechy on the mic. The story of sound systems is one way to describe some of the post-war social history of Caribbean migration to England. From 1954, when men like Duke Vin and Count Suckle arrived by boat from the Caribbean, the unique Jamaican invention of the sound system, with its massive speakers, exclusive records, and live mic entertainers, came to figure as a central part of Black British life. Sound owner-operators like Count Suckle and Duke Vin had a huge role to play in building Brixton and Britain's Caribbean-derived soundtrack. Even up to today, old-time sounds like Jashaka, the spiritual musical warrior, set up their vast systems to play strictly reggae selections for loyal fans. But there have been many, many sounds over the years with all sorts of musical styles, but always returning to the enveloping pleasures of bass frequencies. I'm back in Brixton, and I'm meeting the man who's been called the Bard of Brixton. On a bitterly cold spring morning, novelist Alex Wheatle meets me in Windrush Square to talk about his fond memories of 80s sound systems and dancers. Because before Alex was a famous writer, he ran his own little sound system called Crucial Rocker.
Me and my friends, because we were building our own little sound system with some 8x4 chipboard, rip it up with a big saw, 2x2 pine. We used to use roofing insulation, and that's how we kind of learned. In those days, all the big sounds used valve amplifiers. They used to call it piece of 5 or piece of 8. In other words, 500 watt, 800 watt. I mean, it's very heavy. I mean, sometimes we used to play in blues dances on a 16th floor of a council block. And trust me, the lift wasn't working. It was a torture trying to get the equipment upstairs to the flat, you know. But it was worth it in the end, because once we wired up, the music was just sublime. All of a sudden, the shutters at the back of the van were raised to reveal about 10 black youngsters, none of whom looked old enough to drain liquor. They bullfrogged out of the van and vigorously started their evening's work. They were the box boys of the sound system, responsible for the lifting and carrying of all the heavy equipment. A gravel-like voice or Jamaican accent boomed out, "Mind your back, mind your back." As the double doors at the entrance swung open, the box boys bumped the hooch boxes the size of double wardrobes into the arena. Meanwhile, Brenton and Floyd queued up to gain entry, hoping to sight Biscuit, Finley, Coffinet. There was another liquor belly man dressed in army garb and sporting a hairstyle akin to Jimi Hendrix's, receiving the entry tax while shouting in a Kingstonian twang, £1.50 if you come in. If you're not of it, remove yourself from the gate. £1.50 if you come in.
I share some of those memories with Alex. For me, a session with Cox and Sounds, some blues parties, and the wonders of being in an area that boomed reggae, my Brixton Fragments. But I'm here to join the dots, from those glory days up to now. Even if gentrification has long since arrived and things are changing fast, Brixton has a rich, deep history of social music. I'm meeting up with my main guide to Brixton. Veteran housing activist, businessman, and one-time sound system operator himself, Devon Thomas. Devon's taking me for a walk down streets I remember, but with tales I only half know.
Charlie Chaplin lived down here. A lot of actors, while they were resting, used to live around here. And this was street, was nearly all actors lived here. But in later times, the area was compulsorily purchased by the council, because the whole of central Brixton was supposed to be knocked down, and they were going to make this new heart for Brixton, which was going to be horrendous, because they did serve papers on my family home, which is a few streets away. This is Rushcroft Road, which runs down behind the library and Ritzy Cinema, and the whole of central Brixton, back in the 60s, was going to be demolished and built large amounts of high-rise, and the community mobilised. It was that got me involved in the whole question of urban renewal. So the area was squatted, and that remained so until fairly recently. And, you know, a lot of stuff used to happen there, blues parties. And in one of these parties, there was an incident a couple of years ago, and a guy was shot dead. And so the council decided to clear out the buildings, and most have been sold and are being refurbished and turned into very high-value apartments.
Because we're really near the centre of Brixton here.
Well, here we are. This is the beginning of the front line, as it's called in the old days. Atlantic Road, which is the continuation of Railton Road. And I was involved when I was working with the council in regenerating this part of the area to demonstrate what could be done. And most of these buildings along here were derelict in the 80s. The shops were occupied, but upstairs, no windows, and there was pigeons living in there and so on. And right in front of us here was where the urban unrest began in 1981.
Brixton has seen citizens and police running as bricks flew, buildings burned and stores were looted.
It was in April 1981.
Race war, cried the media.
Down in the ghetto of Brixton.
Police provocation, shouted blacks.
Babylon them caused such a friction that it bring about a great insurrection. And it spread all over the nation. It was truly an historical occasion.
This is how Brixton has always been. It's that unique place.
Some may suffer, some may burn.
A remix by Hiatus of Lynton Quincy Johnson's poem about the 81 riots, The Great Insurrection. We're heading for the Black and White Cafe in Atlantic Road to meet the man himself, dub poet Lynton Quincy Johnson. They say you shouldn't meet your heroes, but LKJ is still one of mine. He doesn't do so many interviews these days, but I'm glad he's agreed to a quick conversation with me. Meantime...
Johnny! Now, this is the guy who owns the Black and White, who is, he's my old schoolmate of mine. Yes, my brethren. All right, go. It's a friend of mine called Brent. He's from Sydney, yes, Australia.
Yes, Brent.
Just coming to your place, sit down for a little while.
You're welcome.
Lynton is coming down. We're going to interview him, you know?
Yes, man, you're welcome. Yeah? Yes.
Johnny's not quite as veteran as me.
Yes.
Can't be on God.
Yes, he's the Don.
But he's here in this kind of critical place along the road here. We're just talking about the whole front line.
Yeah.
And he's bringing that into the future, you know? First class establishment, providing fresh food from the Caribbean for his clientele.
Yes. How long's the Black and White been here, John?
3 years.
3 years.
Originally, Peggy's Cafe.
First black restaurant in Brixton.
She passed on and passed on the tradition to Johnny.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go across.
As we wait for LKJ, a few more stories from Devon Thomas.
I used to live, when you go down there, the first left, on Rattray Road. I moved in there in 1959, and I'd come in 56, and I lived the first 3 years in the UK down in Vauxhall. There was a little community who'd come from where we'd lived in Jamaica. My father's good friend had bought a house down there, and we came and stayed in a one room, which everybody did in those days. My father had come up a few years before we did, you know, got a job. His story is quite interesting. He was a steam engine railway man back in Jamaica, and he travelled all around Central and Southern America building and repairing railways. My uncles had come here during the war. They'd served in the Air Force, and then he came up and tried to get a job with British Rail. He was an apprentice-served railway engineer. And when he went for his interview at British Rail in Euston, the personnel officer, when he looked at his papers, sort of laughed and discarded them disdainfully and said, look, and pointed at a broom, we got that if you want it. We don't recognise all these Mickey Mouse qualifications. Despite the fact Jamaica was a colony, it had been a British qualification he'd sat, but as far as arrangements here, you'd come to do the jobs that the white working class weren't prepared to do, and it was... they couldn't get any takers, you know, in transport, in the health service and so on, and in building trade, because, you know, there was massive rebuilding going on after the war. So he went into the building trade and used his skills as with rivets, putting up the steel frames to the high-rise buildings that were starting to go up. You know, he was still earning 10 times what he earned as a skilled railway engineer in Jamaica. So that was why he was able to save up and send for me and my mum and the rest of the family. And took him 3 years, and we bought our house here, and we moved up here. We were the first black family to live this side of the railway line, because in those days, somewhere in Geneva Road, which is the other side of the railway line, was the heart of the African and Caribbean community that was settling here. Largely because it had been owned by a Nigerian prince who'd been here since the 30s and owned quite a number of properties on that street. And the rest were owned by the church commissioners. And so there wasn't a kind of immediate barrier. You know, there was no signs about no dogs, no Irish, no blacks.
This is what people say is always the backdrop.
Yeah.
It's not terrible. I mean,
my office used to be a few yards from the police station and down the road from the fire station as well. So whenever I used to be on the phone, people come and said, how come there's always sirens going off in your town? I said, well... it's the way it is.
I'm believing it'd be for some action.
That's it. Going back for tea.
It's like they were about to drive into the cafe, actually.
They like to keep their profile up.
Somehow, listening to police sirens in Atlantic Avenue seems appropriate as we wait for Lynton Quincy Johnson.
Music of blood, black, rare pain, rooted out gear. All ten stopped in the bubble and the bounce and the leap and the weight drop. It is the beat of the heart, the is pulsing of blood that is a bubbling base. A bad, bad beat pushing against the wall with bar black blood. And there's a whole heap of passion gathered, like a frightful farm, like a righteous farm. Giving off wildlife is madness. Bad out there, hotter than the heights of fire, living heat down volcano core. Is the cultural wave a dread people deal?
Greetings. Let's do it, man, because I'm busy, you know?
Yes, sure, sure.
I've got to do my Saturday shopping.
Yes, of course, yeah. This is your local street, in fact, isn't it?
Yeah, I just live further up the street, yeah.
How long have you lived here?
In the Brixton area, on and off, since I came to England in 49 years ago.
And you came here as a 10-year-old, I
11.
Think, wasn't it? 11.
Mm-hmm.
Can you remember those moments of arriving in London, but maybe more specifically in Brixton?
Yeah, it was a very cold, overcast November day. And everything looked bleak and depressing, and it shattered any illusion that I might have had about what England was and the nature of England, you know. But I came to Brixton, and after a while I got settled in and I felt comfortable because there were other people like me around. There was a strong Jamaican community. There was the market where you saw Jamaican food, Jamaican people. There were other boys from the Caribbean, not just Jamaica, but the Caribbean in general, who were at school. So I quickly made friends with the other boys from my own cultural background. So in a sense, it wasn't all that difficult to fit in and adopt and adjust to the new environment. School was a little bit traumatic to begin with because racial hostility, racism from white boys and from teachers and all of that. But again, when you're that age, 11 years old, you make friends quickly. And I made friends with some white English boys. And, you know, I guess it must have been easier for somebody of my age group to adopt than it was for my parents' generation, who had to put up with a lot of things that they wouldn't have tolerated under different circumstances. The thing that stands out in my mind is that reggae music and sound systems provided the nexus for my generation to forge an independent identity in a racially hostile environment. Sound systems were crucial, and reggae music was crucial. It was the kind of umbilical cord that linked us to where we came from. And it, in a sense, it reinforced the idea that what we'd left we'd also brought with us, because we brought with us Caribbean cultural identities. We didn't leave them behind in Jamaica when we arrived, but we brought them here with us.
Night number one was in Brixton. Soprano B sound system was a beating out a rhythm with a fire. Coming down his reggae, reggae wire. It was a sound shaking down your spinal column. A bad music tearing up your flesh. And the rebels them start of fighting. The youth them just burn high. It's war amongst the rebels. Madness, madness, war. Night number two down at Shepherd's. Right up Railton Road. It was a night named Friday when everyone was high on brew.
You took to writing at a pretty early age, didn't you?
I began writing poetry at the end of the 60s, during the early 70s, when I became involved in the Black Power movement. I was in the Black Panthers, and it was in the Black Panthers that I discovered black literature. And a book called The Souls of Black Folk by W.E.B. Du Bois, the American scholar, awoke something in me and made me want to express myself about the experiences that my generation was going through as black youths growing up in the mother country, which was not very maternal. That was a period of black awakening for my generation of young black people. You know, black consciousness was sweeping both sides of the Atlantic, in America, in the Caribbean, and on this side of the Atlantic.
You, I think in about 1973, wrote a poem called All We Doin' Is Defendin'. Let's tell us something about that.
Well, that poem really expressed the sentiments of the youth of my generation with regard to what we were experiencing on the streets with the police. Not too dissimilar to what young black people are experiencing today. I mean, black youths are like, in some instances, up to 14 times more likely to be stopped and searched by the police. And it's the same thing that my generation went through, only it wouldn't be, in the case of my generation back in the 60s, it wasn't just stop and search. You were imprisoned and given a criminal record for sus, sus being suspicion, where you'd be accused of and convicted for attempting to steal from persons unknown. But what I find astonishing is that although a lot of things have changed in this country, that not only have we changed Britain, and in changing Britain we have changed ourselves, a lot of things haven't changed at all. And I find it really depressing to know that my grandson, who is 18, 19 years old, has lost count of the amount of times he's been stopped and searched by the police. And it's the very same thing that my generation went through nearly 50 years ago.
From the 70s onwards, right through the 80s, there was a sense of insurrection, and you wrote probably the most kind of famous poem about the Brixton insurrection.
You didn't have to be prescient to know that something would give sooner or later. When pressure builds up, inevitably there's going to be an explosion. That's the law of physics. And it's the same with human relations, you know. And the kind of oppression, racial oppression that we were experiencing at the hands of the authorities, inevitably something was bound to give. The racism that we experienced with white working class people, we could cope with that and deal with that. But state institutionalized racism is another matter altogether. And it was inevitable that, given our history, because we come from a culture of rebellion, going back to the days of slavery, we weren't just going to sit back and take it. Sooner or later, something was going to happen. Mm. It was inevitable.
You were probably called on a lot to talk about the 2011 riots. Mm. What sort of parallel do you see, or the continuities between 1981 and 2011?
Well, the similarities is that both took place in the time of austerity, when working class people were being made to pay for the greed which resulted in the capitalist crisis, in the same way that working people, not just black people, working class people everywhere, are being made to pay for what the bankers, for the mess that we've gotten into as a consequence of the action of the casino gambling by the bankers. So that's the most striking parallel. And the fact that police harassment and oppression of black youth were the biggest issues within our communities.
I guess I want to ask you where you see Brixton now.
It's still a nice place to live. It's changed enormously, because after the 81 riots and the 86 riots, a lot of black people moved out and moved up to Thornton Heath and Croydon and other places. And the community underwent a process of gentrification, and the demographics have changed. House prices are ridiculous. And I guess it went through the same gentrification process that Harlem went through in America. But Brixton still has sentimental and symbolic meaning for black people. And I guess for a lot of people who live outside of the area, it has this kind of exotic charm about it or whatever.
I mean, do you see that the African-Caribbean identity, the nature of this area, is going to remain, or do you think this process of gentrification will alter?
Your guess is as good as mine. Only time can tell.
And with that, the Dub Poets split for the market.
Gave you all we owned, became your nurses and bus conductors, refuge and railway and postal workers. Got the country back on its feet and turned round to make us weep. History, history, history. Jane. We're in a system that uses you. We're in a system that abuses you. We need to break out the chain. Get the liar out of number 10. Get the liar out of his den. We need to break out the chain. Satisfaction, the only alcohol and cancer fix is babies, nappies, and period protection. Blood clot. Maggie took the milk from the children 40 years ago. There's a whole generation, there's nothing left to go. History, history, history. Now Irish blacks and dogs, them treated fella human like they was alien. Now Irish blacks and dogs, no Irish blacks and dogs. Them treated fella human like they was alien. No Irish blacks and dogs, no Irish blacks and dogs. Them treated fella human like they was alien. No Irish blacks and dogs, no Irish blacks and dogs. Them treated fella human like they was alien. And the wheels keep turning, there's no turning back. After Stephen Lawrence and a whole lot of that. You can't treat people like animals and expect no comeback. A backlash. Hit you in your fears, yes, a backlash history. Life stealer, life stealer, life stealer, life stealer, history, her story. Yeah, that last piece was called Life Stealer.
Brixton-based jazz and Afrobeat singer Helen McDonald.
But I wrote that song with my parents really in mind, coming over from the Caribbean to Britain and how they felt and how it's changed and how it's so different, because they were typical Caribbeans that came over, and I just wanted to tell their story and just to attach my story to their story, because it's that continuation of history. I'm very interested in history and how things are connected and what's going on, because, you know, if we don't know our own history as a black person, as an African descendant, I need to know who we are and where we're going, and you have to be proud of yourself and know how people made you not proud, you know, all these different things. But that, anyway, that's my little song. It's dedicated to really that generation of people that came over in the 50s and 60s.
Have you played it to your parents?
They're dead. Hopefully they're hearing it. Yeah. But I mean, they never got to hear that because my parents died when I was a child. So I have quite a sort of romantic view. So I take every detail and manifest it. You know, I'm heartbroken, but I really kind of bring it into how to go forward. It's the ancestors, really, because they've become ancestors, because unfortunately they didn't live that long. That's how I like to manifest my music. I like to make a point, really, and tell a story.
Arrivals at Tilbury. The Empire Windrush brings to Britain 500 Jamaicans. Many are ex-servicemen who know England. They serve this country well. In Jamaica, they couldn't find work. Discouraged, but full of hope, they sailed for Britain. Citizens of the British Empire coming to the mother country with good intent. Prodded by public opinion, the Colonial Office gives them a more cordial reception than was at first envisaged. Many are to be found jobs. Our reporter asks them what they want to do.
Now, why have you come to England?
To seek a job.
And what sort of job do you want?
Any type, so long as I get a good pay.
Some will go into industry, others intend to rejoin the services.
Now, you're an ex-Air Force, aren't you?
Yes.
Are you going back into the Air Force again?
Yes.
Do you know if you'll be accepted?
I think so.
Now, may I ask you your name?
Lord Kitchener.
Lord Kitchener. Now, I'm told that you are really the king of Calypso singers. Is that right?
Yes, that's true.
Will you sing for us?
Right now.
Yes.
London is the place for me. London, this lovely city. You can go to France or America, India, Asia or Australia, but you must come back to London City.
To live in London, you are really comfortable, because the English people are very much sociable. They take you here and they take you there, and they make you feel like a millionaire. So London, that's the place for me. Walk down Shaftesbury Avenue. There you will laugh and talk and enjoy the breeze and admire the beautiful scenery of London. That's the place for me. Yes, I cannot complain of the time I have spent. I mean, my life in London is really magnificent. I have every comfort and every sport, and my residence is at Hampton Court. So London, that's the place for me.
The legendary Trinidadian calypsonian, Lord Kitchener, arriving in England in 1948 with the original pioneer group of Caribbean migrants aboard the MV Empire Windrush. This is Brixton Ballads on Into the Music with me, Brent Clough, exploring the 20th century history of social music in Brixton.
My name is Kinez George Kelly, born in Kingston, Jamaica, 1943. Have been in England since the 12th of September, 1957.
Give us some sense of Brixton in those days, in the 50s and 60s. What was it like? I guess the streets must have been quite lively in some ways with new people arriving all the time.
Yes, the whole atmosphere of, for example, going down to Waterloo Station once a week when the boat train came in from Southampton, and just the excitement and the confusion because people would get off the train and they'd be going to Birmingham. And they had no idea where Birmingham was. And there were special people who would go there just to rob them, take them around the corner and leave them, you know? Or you'd get the indigenous taxi driver who would take you to Brixton via Notting Hill, stuff like that. And it was fun to see. And it was also exciting because the new people brought the latest things that were happening in Jamaica, whether it was the latest music, whether it was the latest words, the latest language, the latest whatever. And of course, it was at the time, the beginning of the music industry in Jamaica. And so people would actually bring the latest, they weren't vinyls at the time, they were acetate, that shellac thing. So you would go to the parties to hear the sound men who were able to bring the latest music. So in that sense, the beginning of a proper community and its development was, you know, I was a part of.
Musician and visual artist George Kelly, also known as Fowa Khan, who came to Brixton when he was 14. Favorite haunts in Brixton?
There were spots that you would go to on a Friday night or a Saturday night if you were looking for a blues. You know what a blues is? Or a shubeen. And the word shub means to push. It's a place where you push your way into. So it's either a shubeen or a blues dance, where essentially blues music from the US was played in Jamaica from the early 1940s, because that was the music. They weren't producing their own music at that time. Jamaican music at the time was mento, which is a type of calypso, very gentle calypso. But the farm workers used to go up to the US to cut sugarcane, pick fruits, and they would bring back the latest chess or whatever from Chicago or New Orleans. And the sound systems evolved based on the acquisition of that music in Jamaica. And so it was usually open air. But when it came to Britain, it was in homes and houses like these.
Well, I've been living in the city long, concrete jungle. I've been living in the city long, concrete jungle.
Of course, imagine a white couple living next door and you have a sound system with bass speakers that are 6 foot high, like a wardrobe, bouncing around, you know. I sometimes sympathize with them because they, you know, the sound would be, in Kingston growing up, you could hear a sound system 2 miles away and you could lay in your bed listening to the music as clear as anything. So imagine that in a little terraced house in London. It was a nightmare, but it was exciting. Mm. Then, of course, there was Summer Leighton Road, which was Friday night through to Monday morning. There was something going on somewhere along that road, or three or four venues, gambling, blues dances that went right through the night. And that's where I first heard Count Suckle sound system, and it just kind of blew me away. Concrete jungle, been living in the city too long.
Concrete jungle. The music of Errol Linton, Brixton's own blues harp player, singer and composer, recorded exclusively for this feature. And artist-musician Kinez George Kelly, recalling Brixton in the 1950s and early 60s. My host, Devon Thomas, who introduced me to George, remembers more about the musical environment of Brixton at that time.
They weren't very welcoming to new immigrants going in the pubs because they catered for the local working class white people, and you had women in the saloon bar and the men in the public bar. So the initial people allowed, because you know you were able to apply for a license, and if you had no objections to an existing license holder, you could get your license. And a number of they started clubs that had licenses. But my parents used to take me to some of the clubs. They'd know the people who owned them, and you'd get dressed up. You know, and it had a jukebox and a proper bar, and some of them served meals, right? And it'd be in the big front room. It was a bit like Harlem or 52nd Street in New York. So there was a very lively nightlife.
From a later generation than Devon Thomas and George Kelly, novelist Alex Wheatle has vivid memories of sounds in the late 70s and 80s, versions of which give his novels of Brixton life, like Brixton Rock and East of Acre Lane, so much energy. Like me, he remembers a Brixton soaked in reggae.
The town hall dance was just something else.
We're just over from the town hall.
Yeah,
tell us about what those dances
fantastic
were.
Fantastic memories. The likes of Sir Coxon, the Shaka. Now and again, you would get sound systems from the Midlands. I remember one sound called Quaker City. Oh, my Lord, the bass line they got from their boxes was... It used to go through your chest. You could feel it. It's like a second heartbeat. It really was. And we went because we wanted to hear music that we never heard of before. And so Town Hall Dances was the place to be because the sound system operators would have special music made just for those sessions. And it was quite incredible listening to the to and fro from the sound systems having a music competition of specialised music you never heard of before. And it was just fantastic to see. And the whistles, the dancing, the skanking... Sometimes it sounds like Sir Coxon. They would have a Brixton theme dub plates about subjects relating to what was happening in Brixton of that time. Easy. I mean, sound systems, that's where we got our news from. Most of the news, we didn't get it from the South London Press or the national newspapers. If something was happening, like police raided a dance in Kennington, by next week you'd hear about it in Brixton Hill because the DJ would make up a lyric about it. And that was what was great. And just to be belonging to that kind of movement, I felt an identity that I never had in my life because I grew up in Leafy Surrey in a children's home. The reggae kind of culture was a bit of a cultural shock for me. I mean, I grew up with my white peers playing Gary Glitter and Shawadi Wadi. And so you can imagine the shock I had coming into Brixton. It was such a great place to be. I mean, everywhere on a Friday night, if you didn't have anywhere to go, you would just walk, you know, around the streets, around the estates, and just listen out for the music. Just follow the bass line. It's just a great time to be young. Especially if you love reggae.
Each of the four competing towns claimed a corner, scouting at each other as they connected record decks, preamplifiers, echo chambers and the like, while the box boys were busy stringing up the speaker boxes. The only space near the walls where you couldn't find a speaker box was either at the entrance or where the sound control towers were placed. This was usually aluminium casing about head height, housing all the amplifiers and the extras topped off by a record deck. Floyd and his posse were spellbound, like many others, watching the Moran bus and controls get pieced together, while the youngsters stared at their heroes. The hall filled up rapidly as the sound guys applied the finishing touches to their routine. The crowd savoured the almost ritualistic atmosphere, feeling a sense of belonging as they marvelled at the red, gold and green colours. Rastafarians wore their long locks proudly, and black females, and all in their African-type dresses, added a spice of culture to the event. Pictures of the late emperor Haile Selassie were sellotaped to the walls. The aroma of West Indian cuisine drifted through the air, blending with the exotic breath of marijuana. There was a serious trade at the bar, where strong beers and soft drinks were selling at inflated prices. The dreadlocked operator with a Mombasa sound drew the crowd's attention. He carefully placed the record on the rotating table and spoke into the microphone.
Test one.
The amplified voice was a cue for the people massing around the lobby to rapidly converge in the hall, where they watched the operator finger wipe the needle of the record deck, producing a heavy scratching sound that earthquake from the speakers. Looking very proud and clocking the crowd around him, the Moran bus operator announced through the microphone,
In tune, champions of the world, Moran bus.
One of the great all-time London sounds, often heard in the town hall and around Brixton, was Sir Coxon. And one of the greatest MCs from that set was the mighty Jar Screechy. I catch up with Screechy for a conversation and to record an exclusive track, a dub plate full of local history.
Original Wakan Skank Jar Screechy talking, representing the world, peace, love and unity to all. Seen.
When a man has done the screeching, yes, I am. Strictly culture, you don't know. I'll switch to the bubble one and daddy comes from the nice of the lawn. Seen. Love.
I used to work for a tourist company a long time ago, and people used to come off and ask, you know, hey man, where's Brixton? How you get to Brixton? They've got to see Brixton before they go back because they hear all this thing about Brixton. You know, it's. I don't know. It's Brixton's not Brixton how I knew it. It's Brixton updated. You know, it's updated. All the clubs, everything, reggae clubs. So maybe one club that's there was there from 1980 something. Steppers on Coal Harbour Lane. Steppers nightclub. And that's still going now. And it's not even reggae. It's drum and bass and hip-hop and all that. Because that's the crowd now, the paying crowd. It's sad. It's really sad.
I mean, is there any way to rebuild that reggae identity for Brixton?
Boy, I don't know. I mean, the only sound, really, I can say that's holding up anything really now is Shaka. Shaka's been there from when, and they're still there doing their thing and playing. No disrespect, but I'm not really a Shaka man as such. I'm a Coxon man. Shaka is deep roots and them thing there. Fine for me, but I was Coxon. I come from that school, and that's how I know it. And that school was the teacher. It wasn't no easy thing, man. Sweat, Coxon, you pick up the mic, it's sweat, man. Tough, but good. They bring me, and I will always love Coxon.
We go by the name of Sir Coxon, say where we come from, no dung and Brixton.
Don't come in, daddy screechy, sing out your melody.
MC Jar Screechy on Sir Coxon Sound. The first sound I ever really heard was Coxon, and the noise and the pure joy of it are still with me.
Music is my life, and what a better way to express yourself, to try and teach the youth them, or to tell them something, but in music.
Now this is original Jawakan Skank Screechy representing the world. Peace, love, and unity. What do you call me? Lord, they call me Wonka Tang, they call me Wonka Tang, Bling Ding, Wonka Tang, they call me Wonka Tang. Me no one no bus, no car, me no one no.
blasted minivan. Me don't want no bus, no car, me don't want no blasted minivan. So me walk and scan to me destination. Me walk from straight on me reach a Brixton. We go check like a dread and the Darbas band. Book up your society in my pass with the woman. Dem a go a Brixton market, we go buy fish and yam. Me walk from the reach a Somalitan. Me knock on the door of General John. Him never did it, so me scan can't go long. Me sight no woman and me sight no man. The sun did a shine, so Brixton rum. Holy heap of people, me say live a Brixton. All from a people from a different nation, like Portuguese and African, Canadian, American, Indian, Australian, and Japanese and Caribbean. Me say too much name fi I'm a nation. We call me Wankatan, they call me Wankatan. Lord, Wankatan, they call me Wankatan. You hear me? Wankatan, they call me Wankatan. Me say 1948 Jamaicans come to England. Pandy wind rush sail across the ocean. The first place to stop that was Brixton. It was like a new start, a new foundation. They were willing to work full of education, but all they got was racism. When I back to 1981 with police brutality and segregation. A pure stop and search for every black man. We couldn't take no more, so we have to make a stand. Ram jam, riot in a Brixton. Ram jam, riot in a 81. Ram jam, riot in a Brixton. Ram jam, riot in a 81. Man a fling rock, stone and petrol bomb. A bun down shop, house, yard and van. Police a fight back with them big gunshot. To the powers of Jah we get inspiration. Jah we can't take no more of the persecution. So we all unite and become as one. We fight the government and the wicked Babylon. We call me Wankatan, they call me Wankatan. Lord, Wankatan, they call me Wankatan. Wankatan, they call me Wankatan. We say in a breeze and you find electric avenue. This was the first street lights to have electric cross through. Bricks and high road, you find the O2. I want you to know it was a music venue. They call me Wankatan, they call me Wankatan. Lord, Wankatan, they call me Wankatan. Come in a no bus, no car, me no own no blasted minivan. Me no own no bus, no car, me no own no blasted minivan. Say me walk and scan to me destination. Me walk from straight on me reach a Brixton. Me scan from Brixton, me reach a Asdon.
Jah Screechy exclusive. Yeah, man.
Jah Screechy and his dub late reggae history of this part of South London. Brixton story.
Fire for all the pagans. Judgment for our crocodile government. Listen to peace, yeah. All right. How many moves are going to live with and we can wag with a well person, Zyla. Hold on, here, put it up again.
A moment arrives that neatly folds the past into the present. The weather warms up a bit, and I'm invited down to the Domino Club in Cold Harbour Lane. It's a space that's very reminiscent of a Jamaican lawn, an open-air yard where the smell of jerk chicken and curry goat from various stalls fills the air, and a sound system strung up in a corner and is playing to the local community. In this case, the sound is King Tubby's, and it's been in existence since the 1970s.
Over here, I have a gentleman. Can you come a bit closer to me, young man?
I've been asking the mic man, JD, to name-check the location as I record him. Then he ushers me up to the front of the stage.
He's been on me 3 times today. Come up here. Come on up here. You're welcome because it's a festival time.
It's just a great chance to be here and big up to everyone here this evening. It's wonderful to be here and feeling the Brixton vibes.
Yes, Brent. Brent, thank you. So we're going to set the machine and set the time and have a entertaining whale of a time. Yes, we're giving them a round of applause for the group. We'll just start. Let's hear it. Big it up. Give it up. Hello! Brixton Domino Club! It's festival time! Festival time! Turn on! Yes, I am! Two audio, take a lot, two. So I lot of the live artists, a couple of respect.
Yeah, I'm Yaakov Yehuda.
local artist from Brixton. I sing and sing various sound system and anything, any challenge. You wouldn't get this vibe in every area, you know. This is Brixton. You wouldn't get this if you go to Streatham, because the community is not that tight in Streatham. You wouldn't get that in Clapham and certain various other artists, areas, sorry. But you know, like Brixton, that's why people like Brixton, because Brixton brings together the you know, different cultures, different colors, and it have a, you know, like a unique, you know, like a unique vibe, you know.
It's this mix that, according to my host Devin Thomas, makes this place different and now desirable.
There'll always be a substantial amount of African Caribbean people here, as long as my lifetime, I can imagine, because my children and grandchildren still live here. Brixton's been changing the whole time. It's never been this kind of nice, stable place. It set the trends, right? Sartorially, politically, all kinds of levels. So that's why that brand was created, that reputation was created. So now people want to come and get a piece of that, that vibe, you know? And you can't commodify it, that's the problem. You see, the system we live in always wants to turn things into a saleable product. This is an indiscernible thing. And as soon as you mess with it too much, you'll lose it. You know?
For me, Brixton's always been a place to be in London, especially because of its African Caribbean culture, but also because it's an area of energy and change, something not always the case in the UK. There are not so many big reggae dancers like this anymore in Brixton, which I think's a pity. Interestingly, though, this event, with its Jamaican-style sound system, food and vibes, is co-organised by the local Latino community.
Viva las papas con choco y las papas aliñadas. Vamos a dejarnos de fuego y de cohetes y de cañones.
This is what has to be. Brixton, man. Good Brixton.
De la isla, carajo. De la isla, donde no hay pena ni alegría. Y solo se vive el compás de bulería. ¡Ole!
¡Pero alegría!
Se muera Mortadelo y Filemón. Se muera Mortadelo y Filemón. Se muera Mortadelo y Filemón.
Brixton is still a place where voices can be raised and music is never far behind. My kind of place.
Welcome to Brixton, the place I call home.
Introducing you, Brixton.
There's always something to do in Brixton.
Number one band here in London.
So come to Brixton. People kind of are just themselves in ways that they're not in other parts of London.
And you can keep your Great Britain fam, your country's whack.
Brixton was one hell of a place.
Sure as the sunshine, way up in the sky.
I grew up in Brixton, and Brixton is like, to me, a place where people socialise and come together and live as one.
Brixton Ballads Sound Stories was recorded, written, presented and produced by Brent Clough, with sound engineer Russell Stapleton. The program was made possible by way of the Tony Barrell Fellowship, honouring the memory of our much-missed colleague and former Radio National producer. And there is a companion piece to this one. It's called Brixton Ballads Market Values, also produced by Brent Clough. And it was broadcast on 360 Documentaries last week. It's available as a download. There's a link on our webpage. That's all from me. I'll catch you next week for more Into the Music.